Are we ready in the studio?
Yep.
Prepared and primed.
Final questions?
No.
Seems clear and straightforward to me.
Recorder on. Good show, people. Music.
Preparing for a technical career?
Worried about how you are going to find a job?
Or bring your ideas to market?
Hello, youth of today!
Youth. Oh, please no.
It is I, Sullivan, the policy director for how we manage stuff. At my right hand is Evelyn.
Right hand.
The charming and thoughtful business manager for our podcast.
Help me,
Welcome
Lord.
To a special edition of our show for the Eta Kappa Nu Honor Society that we are calling...
Why the future doesn't matter. Youth of today, how could you be so
friendly?
No, so
open heart. How about receptive?
I think I was going for stupid.
I think my method was obvious to even the most casual listener.
Oh, and how so?
Well, I merely wanted to demonstrate to our listeners, the members of the Eta Kappa Nu Engineering Honor Society, that our knowledge of them and their careers was just as poorly informed and badly conceived as their
and
own.
And you did that? And more.
But you see, we really know nothing about future careers, even though we give beautiful talks on careers of the future.
But we always illustrate them with stories from the past.
Stories that are inspiring, but not always, strictly speaking, true.
Like Steve Jobs and the iPhone.
Disrupted the entire technology market. Such a wonderful example.
Except it ignores the environment in which he worked. His firing from Apple, and the failure of his next company.
No, the halo doesn't look quite as good at a close view.
And there is the story of the president of IBM saying that he felt there was only a market for 12 computers in the world.
Ah, yes, the short-sightedness of the elder generation. Young people always love that.
Except he was not talking about all computers, just one computer.
Really?
Yes, the IBM 701. And you know what?
I suspect that you are going to tell me.
He sold 18 of them.
So he exceeded his sales goal.
By 50%. Not bad.
Not bad at all. And then there is the story of the STEM crisis.
How are we not educating enough, well, young people in science, technology, engineering, and math?
Precisely. It is so comforting to young engineers because it makes them feel that they will be needed and loved in the future.
And yet, this is a story about the past.
Oh, of course, of course. And we have told this story so many times that we are starting to sound like the proverbial boy who cried wolf.
When did we do this?
Well, let's see. We can start with the Soviet atomic bomb scare of 1949, the Sputnik surprise of 1957, the software crisis of 1968, the oil crunches, of which there are two, of 73 and 78, the Japan competition of 82, the personal computer crisis recession, no, the personal computer recession of 92, the globalization angst of the 2001, the list goes on and on and on and on.
All of those?
And more. Each time we claimed that we were facing certain doom and destruction if we did not get more engineers.
And so what happens?
Well, you see, this is the point. Each of these so-called STEM crises presaged the restructuring of the technology community.
New kinds of jobs and new kinds of industries?
You understand the circumstances precisely.
You have an example.
Well, the software crisis of the 1960s best serves the role for our Eta Kappa Nu audience.
Okay. For once, I'm going to play the innocent questionnaire.
Oh, thank you so much.
What happened in the software crisis of the 1960s?
Well, in the mid-60s, we thought that every company needed to have their own programmers to write software for the way each company worked.
Because that's what we'd done to that point?
Precisely. Now, in 1966, the American government estimated that we would need 60,000 new programmers a month.
Ooh, an estimate. And did reality decide to agree with it? Or did we really need that many programmers?
Well, we needed more programming expertise, and we indeed got some.
That's good.
But we really solved the problem by making our programmers more productive.
And we did that?
By inventing the software industry.
We didn't have one before?
No, we did not.
So how did the software industry change things?
Well, it meant that the work of one programming team could be used, well, by many corporations.
Of course.
And it also meant that there was a new distance between software designers and the people who would use their handiwork.
So software engineers had to learn how to learn how to determine their customers' needs.
Yes, And the programmers who were trained with the old ideas, the idea that they would create software for an individual company, were useless.
Now that you've ruined the hopes of the young engineers of Etta Kappa Nu, shall we bring in our guests to talk about the technical environment of the present?
Of course. I'd like to introduce Penelope Ottmar. She is the principal of the Lillian Moller Gilbreth School for Disruptive Innovation in Mountain View, California, and sits on a number of advisory boards for Silicon Valley. Ms. Othman.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And joining her is Bix, a master scrum master who works with our podcast. Bix?
Thanks. This is great.
So you want us to talk about the current engineering environment?
Well, that is our intent.
Easy. It's like hip hop.
Yes, I was thinking of something like that. That's a good metaphor.
Hip?
Hop. Hip hop.
Or pop music in general. Have you heard that new one by Beyonce? I mean, it is just brilliant.
You're asking me about Beyonce.
I mean, in this new thing, she sets up a catchy pop thing, but behind it are these, you know, classical harmonies like Wagner and stuff. And, you know, the ba-da-boom, 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 ba-da-boom. And then there's a key change, and bam, you're in a Dixie Chicks song.
Are we talking about...
Oh, you are clever. You are exactly... The ethos of popular music is borrowing, sampling. You assemble elements from other songs, other genres. The artist expresses his or her ideas through a collection, a montage.
Yeah, and engineering is the same.
Yes. We now have a very rich collection of technical objects that engineers can utilize in their work. It is very much like sampling.
Yeah, appies. Gold GitHub and 3D printers. Oh, Raspberry Pi. Oh, and all the DIY stuff. Standardized parts. Mathematical support programs, additive manufacturing, rapid prototyping. It's all yours for the taking.
So you are saying that the engineer needs to be more of an artist?
Assemble stuff. Be creative. Yeah.
There is a theory behind this. Knowledge travels more easily than people or things, and we've created a world where technical knowledge travels very easily.
Because of the internet.
More than that. We've done a lot of work to standardize knowledge, common computer languages, common data formats, common analysis.
So in our service to the young and to our Etta Kappa Nu audience, how should our new engineers prepare themselves for jobs in this new environment?
I have no idea. It's like not my problem.
I think that's exactly right.
Wait a minute. Bix, you manage large software projects?
And get them done on time and under budget.
And Penelope, you're in charge of one of the most prestigious technical schools in the Bay Area.
Well, it's kind of you to say so. Yes.
And neither of you have any advice to offer our young engineers?
I would say that comfortable shoes are a must. Never go cheap on your shoes.
And dress for the job you want to have in the future, not the job you currently have.
Technical preparation. Technical preparation for their careers.
It's really not for us to say.
No. I have nothing.
The problem of starting a career and getting engaged in the technical community is deeply personal. It requires you to adjust not only your skills, but your outlook, your goals, your understanding of the world.
That's a good way of putting it.
My father was a new engineer in the 70s, just at a time when the big monolithic companies of the 50s and 60s were starting to have trouble.
So he was like preparing for a career in software engineering when the companies were thinking in terms of hardware.
Well, systems engineering, yes. He never worked for a big company. He had a new job every 18 months, had to read like mad to keep up with the developments, had to be willing to let others implement his ideas.
So his company is one of the old ones.
Long gone. Closed its doors in 2008. The new systems firms are more international, more connected to a network of companies, more specialized.
And so the young engineer needs to learn how to fit themselves into this new environment.
It's trial and error. Trial, really. You want to cut it off before you get the error.
I can't teach what's going on. I listen to what our alums tell me. They say they are improvising. They are being artists.
They're sampling. Like hip-hop.
I think that's a lovely analogy, but perhaps more like Tribe Called Quest than Beyonce.
Yeah, whatever works for you.
Electric relaxation, I would say. Or maybe I left my wallet in El Segundo. Shall we bring this episode to a close?
I think that is good.
Strictly speaking, that's our job.
We are the hosts, after all.
The world changes, and you have to be prepared to adjust.
Today, we've talked about the new engineering environment and how you need to fit into it.
We think it's a bit like hip-hop, like sampling.
You're the people who have to do it, and so you need to tell us how it works.
I'm Penelope Othmar from the Lillian Moller Gilbert School for Disruptive Innovation.
I'm Bix. Master Scrum Master.
For an Etta Kappa Nu episode.
Of the podcast, How We Manage Stuff.
Bye-bye, darlings.
And we have a wrap. Thank you, everyone.
And we didn't even get to say goodbye.
Such are the trials of the competitive marketplace.
Copyright?
Sure.
You all really need to subscribe to How We Manage Stuff.
You can find us on iTunes or Facebook or our website, http://howwemanagestuff.com or LinkedIn or Tumblr.
Or as we like to say, wherever fine podcasts are sold.
This is episode 18610, and it's copyright 2018 by Jaggi LLC, all rights reserved.